This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Flowchart with your boy,
my boy,
Matt Wolf,
and Joe Fit.
Hey!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. My name is Matt Wolf. I'm here with my co-host,
Joe Fear.
He forgot my name. Today, we're talking to a good buddy of ours. Actually, very recently became a good buddy of ours. We met him at a networking event and got to talking and had a lot of shared passions on things like angel investing and how to disrupt businesses and buying and selling businesses and fitness world and just so much in common with the guy that we, you know, he became. It was like, did we just become best friends?
Yup.
Kind of thing. And it was... We brought him on the show and had a great conversation about all of those topics, all of the angel investing disruptors. And one of the things that you'll notice is towards the end of the episode, we get super, super, super passionate about the concept of how do we disrupt industries that are just getting antiquated. And the conversation just freaking took off from there, and it just flew, and we had an amazing discussion. Our guest today is, his name is Mike Matus. He's out of Long Beach. And he's doing some really, really amazing stuff, and we can't wait to share this knowledge and this info with you.
For sure, you're gonna learn some stuff that that will basically separate you from the masses no matter what you're doing right now. Some skills that will be able to, you know, you can sidestep from the crowd and pretty much stand out immediately. That's kind of the overall feeling. And so before we get into there, definitely go shoot us a message. We want to hear from you on our website at evergreenprofits.com/contact. That's the best way to get a hold of us. It's direct and we will respond to you. We want to hear from you, your thoughts. If you have some ideas, questions, whatever it might be, shoot them over our way and we'll get a hold of you. All right. So going on to Mr. Matus. Right now.
Mike Matus, let's dive in. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, we've been looking forward to this conversation ever since we met you, about a month ago, right? At Aaron Fletcher's mastermind over at his crazy mansion in Encinitas.
that's right.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good time, man, because that was, 2 days, and it felt like, I don't know, like we gravitated to each other. There was like, we're just like, all right, because that's how like Matt and I work. We're like, all right, when we're flowing around, we don't need to go deep with everybody, but it's like, if there's like one person that's rocking and rolling we resonate with, bam. And that was you. Yeah. So that was cool.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I know. And I mean, it was cool because, you know, on one side, you guys were there showing your stuff and I'm like sitting there taking notes, just trying to like,
yeah.
And then on the breaks, we were, you know, masterminding and kind of helping each other out and making sure we're all on the same page and trying to trade secrets to get our businesses to the next level, you know?
Yeah, man.
So,
yeah. It was awesome. Yeah. And, you know, and we're going to be meeting up in person in a couple weeks here. And, a lot of good stuff is going to come from it. And, you know, we'll probably get into a lot of that throughout the course of this conversation, but I want to actually start the conversation by getting a little bit of your backstory, kind of how you, essentially what you were doing before you were an entrepreneur and sort of the progression of how you became an entrepreneur. And we'll kind of find some cool, interesting stuff to pick at through that story.
I love it. So yeah, man, that's a great question. I was a college athlete. Actually, what's funny is I was a football player, but I was a kicker. So that's like half an athlete, I guess.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're like, you played college football. I was like, yeah, I was a field goal kicker. And they're like, well,
I think you're the smart athlete on that field.
And so what happened was, is that, you know, coming out of high school, I put all my eggs in one basket. And I said, I really want to go to USC for two reasons. One, because I'm a huge USC football fan. And two, because I wanted to go to business school there. And so, you know, I went in, got recruited by Pete Carroll and was sitting there. And they said, we don't scholarship kickers. We make them walk on. So you got to like pass the SATs like a real like student athlete. I'm like, what?
Go figure.
So, yeah. And I, you know, my story was that, you know, ADD in school, and it's helped me so much in business and entrepreneurship. But back then I was like, if I could just get a 1200 on the SAT, I can get into USC. Well, that didn't happen. I ended up going to junior college and then transferring to Chapman University, which we humbly refer to as the SC of OC. And I played football there. And that's where I met my wife. And the cool thing about it was, is Division I football was a goal of mine, but playing in Division III also gave me like the ability to focus solely on my business. So I started my first business while I was a junior in college, and that was a business called First Step Fitness that's still in you know, it's in business today, but it's an evergreen business for us. And I started it from my dorm room and then built it into a gym here in Long Beach,
nice.
About 10,000 square foot facility. And then the cool thing is now my cousin who's a freshman at USC, he's the starting field goal kicker, and I coached him all up. So at least the second generation got to, you know, like, so I can live vicariously through him. I'm like, one of my family's got to play kicker at USC, and hopefully my sons, who are 6 and 2, can follow in those footsteps. But the entrepreneurial journey started for me in college. I started to see that that just entrepreneurship in general and this thing called digital marketing via Facebook and Google was just going to be a big thing. And I remember having this like really, really in-depth conversation with one of my business professors. And I said, look, I'm torn. Do I go get my MBA, which is kind of like the smart, sensible thing to do, which everyone, you know, my parents told me I got to get, or do I take that money and invest in a real world MBA and just ride this digital marketing wave? And so I did option 2, and that's what set me apart. And I don't think I've ever looked back.
Smart move.
You know, yeah, I mean, like depending on the, you know, the industry, the job or whatever you want to do, grad school could be an option. But at the same time, there's also other options. And for entrepreneurs that kind of know that they're leading an entrepreneurial path, it's very important to kind of speed and execution and get in the game fast, kind of fail forward is huge, because you can always go back to school, but these things are happening now. And if you want to take advantage of them, then you kind of got to get in the game.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's actually, it's cool that you say that, because we're at a conference a couple weeks back, Perry Marshall, and he pretty much said that same exact kind of rant, because I think he homeschools his kids, teaches them the ways that kind of he wants to show them the world, and kind of gives them an option. Is like, okay, well, you know, you can choose to spend X amount of cash to go to school if that's where you choose to put that, you know, that amount of money, or you can take that same money and, even if it's not start a business, maybe it's interning for someone or moving to somewhere to get that experience so you can grow from that point on. And it's just knowing that there's a choice after high school. It doesn't have to be college, but there's so many other things.
I mean, you know, it's in business, you know, like I kind of, as I would imagine, actually, I know you guys do kind of play in different industries and they all kind of come together. You know, I'm a little bit in the investor world now, I'm a little bit in the digital marketing world, a little bit in the fitness world, right? And so, you know, what's crazy about that is like when I talk with investors, I always hear about like this word, and it's like, where's the arbitrage? Where's the arbitrage? Where's
yeah.
And so like I hear that, and what's funny is I think with education, the way that it's slowly, like institutional education is changing very slowly, that there's a huge arbitrage, meaning like there's an opportunity that most people don't see or just strictly choose not to, like they just choose like, hey, I'm not going to believe this, or I'm not going to like put any attention to this. So the arbitrage or the opportunity is all these alternative forms of education that are now popping up, masterminds, homeschooling, things like that, that are more relevant forms of learning and mentoring that are pennies on the dollar. You don't have to go pay to learn. You can actually get paid to learn what your customer wants, which is like the huge arbitrage. Like, why would you go to school for $250K and be in debt till you're 40 when if you know how to interact with humans, you can run a digital marketing startup or a business or even just one type, like a podcast or anything, and get paid.
Even if you're trying to reinvent yourself, you know, like Matt and I have done this, is you take on clients and you learn about an industry or you learn some tactics, but you're getting paid for it. You're not having to really pay for the tactics or for the learning. So if you kind of reframe education, you could totally do that from start to even like if you're pretty savvy, going strong already.
Yeah, it's like a self-liquidating degree.
That's true. I love it. I love that.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah, man. Well, awesome. So talk more about, so you have First Step Fitness. Talk about that location, because I think that's what, like, when we met you, that was the thing that I think Matt and I latched to. We're like, holy shit, this is genius, like, the way you set that up.
Yeah, and obviously, it's not, there's a gym element to it, but it's not just a gym in that location. So if you want to kind of talk about that for a minute, that we found really interesting.
So when I launched from like 0 years to the first 5 years, it was like, get the business up and running. I mean, that's like the entrepreneurial startup story where you're just like grind, you know, tooth and nail all the way up the ladder, just trying to get it solvent and steady, right? Survival mode. Mm-hmm. And so my wife and I were doing that, and we moved to Belmont Shore, and we, you know, took on investors, and we, you know, we paid them all back, and we're sitting here, and then we're looking up, and it's when I started to really understand this term called business disruption that might be new for a lot of people, but it's definitely not new for business owners, where this is one of the few times I think in history, at least in American history, where things can become irrelevant so much faster. Mm-hmm. And I saw that model rapidly becoming just irrelevant with things like apps and different, and it just, in my business plan in college, when I built a business, didn't account for digital disruption and all these different things. I kind of had to learn on the fly. Like, so we quickly pivoted, and we, you know, we built a team, but also what we did was we took a look and say, well, if this is affecting us right here, right now, it's probably already affecting other people or will be in the future. And so once we overcame that one hurdle, we decided to, we have a huge 10,000 square foot facility, and most of it was being used for fitness. And we converted about 2,500 square feet to something called the Launch Lab, which is a small, Long Beach's first small business accelerator, kind of like a, we call it like a founder social club. It's like a country club style amenities and networking without the golf and tennis for scrappy entrepreneurs, startups, you know.
Yeah.
People like, we call it scrappy yet classy, because, you know, like you guys, like, it's not that we don't like nice things and everything like that, but we're constantly assessing, like, do I need this fancy thing, or to put this back in my business, right? Like, I can afford it, but I want to keep the money in the business. So, like, we like that scrappy nature, but at the same time, like, we're doing a lot of cool events, a lot of high class stuff, a lot of high class people, and really what it is a place for three things. One, just for connection. We have events, we have signature events, we do allow people to come in and film and do their seminars here. Matter of fact, we had just had a commercial that aired on Fox Sports. Alex Morgan, the captain of the women's national team, she rented out the facility for a day and did her like soccer commercial here. So it was super cool to see it on Facebook. I'm like, oh dude, that's the Launch Lab and First Step Fitness.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then kind of the second and third phase are mentoring and also like a business pop-up shop. So you can come here and say, hey, I want to rent out this little space right here, 300, 500, 1,000 square feet for 90 days and just kind of see if this new entity or this new idea can take off, if I can actually prove revenue, right? Mm-hmm. And in there, you'll have a team of marketing people who are your, and other entrepreneurs who you can bounce ideas off of. I really think that Long Beach is the next, what I call pro business beach hub, because it's sandwiched between, well, you have all the way at the north, you have Silicon Valley, which is like the birthplace of, you know, digital and startup and tech and everything like that. And then over the years, it's migrated to now what's, you know, affectionately been known as Silicon Beach, which is like Playa del Rey and like Venice Beach. And then it kind of like skips over Long Beach and starts up again in Orange County, like in Irvine and San Diego. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I don't understand why, but it, like, Long Beach is a place where you can still live very, very nicely along the coastal corridor for under $1 million. And so it's only a matter of time before the big tech people, and they're already kind of circling the wagons, are saying, hey, we're going to put our office there. We're going to move our people there. And then that's when the accelerators and the incubators and the whole tech scene kind of start to grow. And you've seen this, like I studied this incessantly, but you've seen this very similar to Long Beach's economy is Detroit. Mm. Long Beach economy is almost 100%, not, I wouldn't say 100%. It's very, very dependent on the harbor, right? The port.
Yep.
And then conventions. So that lends itself to say, well, if those things ever slow down or get disrupted, how does Long Beach make its money?
Sure.
Right. And so it's the same thing with Detroit and with the car industry. And so what Magic Johnson and Josh Linkner, who's an awesome entrepreneur, and then the guy who owns the Cavs, I forget what his name is, but they started Detroit Venture Partners, and they kind of revamped the scene in Detroit. And I kind of saw that the same time they were doing that, there was a huge LA Times article that comes out and it says tech business boom hits everywhere in California but Long Beach.
Yeah.
It just shows
I can relate to that. I was in Detroit just a couple years ago. I know a developer, he's a buddy of mine, and he's right behind the Cavs owner that you're speaking of. I forget his name, but his company's name is
Dan Gilbert.
The guy.
There you go.
Yeah. The company's name is called Bedrock. And in Detroit, it's absolutely amazing because they teamed up with guys like the Obey artist. Forget his name, but it's actually really cool. So both like my buddy, his name is Eric Means, is they're like almost like competitors, but they're both doing what you just said. So it's actually really cool. But I love how you're spotting these gaps. Like I'm almost thinking like, you know, the 80-20 principle. If you're thinking of that, like a whole industry in Long Beach is almost like reliant on just a handful of things. But if one of those go down, like you're fucked.
I live this, right? I'm from Long Beach. I grew up around here. My dad worked for Boeing for 25 years. And then they go, well, Ed, you know, my dad's name, you know, when your kids graduate from high school, you got to move up to Seattle because we're moving everything up to Seattle from Long Beach. It was like 25,000 jobs, just boom. And Long Beach hit like a little mini recession.
Oh, man.
And so it's, you know, that's the thing, right? Is like, I saw that and I'm like, well, there's all this, and now all this Boeing land is being restored and it's all like tech workspace-ish, like common, you know, co-work and everything like that. That revolution, that's kind of the new live, work, play economy that we're speaking about. And this is just domestically. I mean, the entrepreneurial culture and the entrepreneurial effect and the startup effect. I mean, this is also, it was funny because I was at an event last week. My buddy Sanan, who owns an awesome company called KCOM and is the founder of the Internet Marketing Association, he started another company or another like group called the International Executive Council. And I was shocked to hear we were discussing this and they were like, do you know what one of the fastest growing startup hubs is? And I'm like, what? Santiago, Chile. They call it the Chilicon Valley. Startup Lisboa, which is in Lisbon. Well, they'll actually pay American entrepreneurs to come and like, they'll pay you and give you massive tax breaks so you can bring your company there because they know that where entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial ideas go, that money and economy flows.
Yeah. Right?
So it's like, it's not a new thing. It's just seeing it in a different way. I told my partners and a lot of people here, we're probably 18 months early, but I'd rather get feet on the street and boots on the ground right now and develop this so that when it is really time, when the SpaceX's or the Googles or the, you know, the Amazons do kind of like circle around Long Beach and see it for what it really is and what it really could be, I want to kind of already be baked in, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the thing that I see is almost like the biggest sort of roadblock to that, like, happening at a super grand scale is just sort of the sort of California business climate and the, you know, like the United States is one of the, like most like the least business countries, like least business friendly countries when it comes to taxes. And then California is like the least business friendly state in the United States when it comes to taxes. So, I mean, like, that's why you see a lot of companies Google.
And Long Beach is one of the cities that is the hardest to start a business. Yeah, I totally understand. You're absolutely right. You know, what scale this happens, I don't know. I just know that, two things. One, when we say businesses, we're not talking about like Fortune 500s. Like I'm looking at like micro businesses.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you guys, but like I started in fitness, and the whole reason why people, let's say for their health, right? Mm-hmm. Their diet's a huge thing. Well, that's not because they just overeat. It's because the food, like the purity and the like, you know, of the food has diminished over the years. Right. So we have to take supplements now. Even if we just eat the right way, we still have to take supplements to get all of our nutrition.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing in a job. I mean, Long Beach has always been a scrappy working class town. That's what I love about it. It's one of the things, people work hard. They're very down to earth. They're very humble. But as you know, now, like a 9-to-5 salary just won't cut it anymore.
Right.
So a lot of people got side hustles where like when they're just to live like, you know, the American dream, so to speak, you're having to have a business on the side. A lot of people I know, like one of our neighbors that lives in our community, they're very hardworking people, very educated. They got great jobs, great careers. They just borrowed against their 401k to start a laundromat, and it's a little $100,000 a year business that cash flows.
Yeah.
Like, why? Because like that's gonna be the game. Like
maybe
you don't have like a full scale business. Maybe you don't make that entrepreneurial leap, but you always are gonna have to have a side hustle if you're gonna stay like in California with cost of living and everything like that. So I think what the Launch Lab is gonna be aimed at is helping people kind of have that supplemental income in something that they love, and then they have the benefits and the you know, to some point they've already kind of like sewn it all up. They have the degree, they're like, man, I gotta stay in this field. I gotta like keep being a lawyer, a doctor, a teacher. But on the other side, like I can leverage digital marketing and create a group or a coaching program or something that will give them either freedom, income, or at least a purpose.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know? No, it totally does. Can you talk about the Launch Lab and what the actual business model behind it is? You know, because you talked, it's got the gym, and then you're also letting businesses work out of there and pop up, and then you mentioned the accelerator. Can you kind of give a breakdown of how that you know, how you earn off of that, basically?
Yeah. So, I mean, with the Launch Lab, I wouldn't say it's like one of those things that's going to like put my kids through college, but it's one of those things I really wanted to do. Part of the thing that the revenue model is space, right? Like we have an awesome space here. It's very unique. And we have the ability to give people space and in a short-term lease, you know, where they don't have to sign that like, oh my God, I got to sign a 5-year lease. Like we can do a 3-month lease or a 6-month lease just so they can see if their idea is worth pursuing. Mm-hmm. And our goal is really not to have those long-term clients in our facility. The whole idea of an accelerator incubator is to hopefully grow out of that space really quick. You know, so before this was a thing, we were already doing it. Like we've had people come and rent space. We've had people come that are like doctors, chiros, clothing companies, and they would use our space just because we're like a community here. And we would get them clients or show them a couple of tricks on the digital marketing side, and their business, they would outgrow our space. And I said, this is a good problem.
Yeah.
How can we scale this up? But the biggest thing that we want to do is consulting and coaching. There's so many, especially local businesses, there's so many people that still haven't harnessed the power or even understand the power of digital marketing. And this is one of those things, these times in history, where it's only a matter of time before this uneven advantage remains open.
True.
You know, before huge brands are really going to understand that YouTube, Facebook, Google, Instagram are tools that need to be taken seriously as like as radio and television. And so 2-3 years from now, if this unequal advantage or this attention shift is not going to be there for everybody. Right. It's not, you're not going to be able to just start a business with $1,000 of paid advertising and like, you know, and throw up a website. You're not going to be able to test this stuff. It's going to be, it might not be as expensive as starting a traditional business, but it's certainly not going to be as available as it is. And you've already seen that, like people just migrating. Yeah. They're like what used to work 3 years ago or 2 years ago, or even 1 year ago, doesn't have that potency as more people migrate to to each platform. Dude, Facebook, all these. Yeah.
We're seeing it like, yeah, because your ad costs will go up with more competition, mm-hmm. more ads being shown. The savviness of the market will go up. And I mean, Matt and I talk about this all the time, just with the different ventures and verticals we're in. We're like, shit, mm-hmm. there is a gap. Like, and that's the big thing. If you could spot these gaps in whatever vertical you're in and maybe leverage a partner or leverage something, some system to kind of get you in there so you're not having to build from scratch. I mean, if you could just like pair those two things up, and if you have a minute amount of like how to drive traffic or how to help mm-hmm. someone convert their offer and not actually monetize, you can, that's seven-figure business very quickly if you focus. But like you said, you got to jump on it, you know?
Yeah. And part of it too is like we've had really, really well-known entrepreneurs and celebrities and digital marketers and coaches come and hold their events here. And it's great because they're very, I mean, people that have made it, people that are actually doing something in business, like it's always a self-actualization principle. Like now that I've made it to some degree, how do I help other people make it or give back? So mm-hmm. the cool thing about the Launch Lab is to have different levels, you know, like people come in that quote unquote have already made it and they're sharing these insights, tips, tricks, you know, like, you'll go to like someone who has like an Aaron Fletcher, right? Like that's where we met. Mm-hmm. He's sitting there and he's like, hey, look, guys, let's take a look behind one of my funnels or one of my, you know, strategies or systems. And it's like, really? And they're like, yeah. Right. And so like, we want to do that for other people so that they can see that it might not be easy, but it's very simple in its approach. Is that if you're good at something, if you can offer value to the world, then don't get caught up on the technical aspect and overwhelm, because there's always someone willing to help you if you have the next idea or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of confusion that keeps people on the sidelines. I know it had for me for a long time. Mm-hmm. Be like, oh man, I got to have this SaaS product with this, and it's got to be tricked out, and I can't put it out in the world until it's perfect. Oh, and I'm like, yeah.
No, what you're saying right there totally resonates with us, because one of the worlds that Joe and I have been wanting to get deeper into, but we haven't yet, is the SaaS world, the software as a service world. Mm-hmm. And Joe and I actually have fairly decent ideas for software, but we've never pushed forward on it because it's a world that we don't know. And, mm-hmm. you know, and really all it comes down to is who in our network can we tap that does know this information that we can just, you know, give a call to. But that's been actually one of our roadblocks at our current state where we are in business right now, is this is our sort of next venture that we want to go down, but it still seems a little too complicated, a little over our heads. So
you know, it's one of those things, and we, Matt and I talk about this all the time, but you're almost saying it here. This is what's clicking with me, Mike, is like, if you meddle in the details for too long, you're going to get yourself confused. You're going to stall out. That opportunity might pass. You might even lose your fire to even create that thing, because you're like, oh shit, this is going to be so complicated. I have to do it all. But like you said, like you can build a team, or you could just find some contractors on Upwork, partner with someone. But like, it's just like, start the damn thing. Just go.
Well, and like you said as well, like if it's a really, really good idea, people are going to want to work with you on it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I kind of have like a four-step foundational approach to when I'm looking at a business, or I'm looking at, you know, maybe a possible investment. And when someone's telling me about their business, I'm like, I'm checking this box, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's why I love, like, you guys hit all four boxes, right?
Nice.
So like the first one is the dream. Like, can I see in the future what you guys are talking about? Or like, have you made it to where it's like, pulling me, it's like a magnet, like you're like, oh, evergreen profits, and then this I'm like, oh my god, I can see the dream clearly, because that's pretty much an idea, is you're selling a dream, like, you know.
Sure.
And then and that's investors or future clients or anybody. I mean, they got to be able to see it clearly and be somehow moved emotionally before they can conceptually, you know, before that, like, money changes hands, before they're like, okay, what's the number? Let's do that, right?
Right.
They make a decision first with their emotion, and then if it sounds good, they rationalize, right? But they don't. Mm. They typically don't do it the other way around. And then the second thing is the team. Like, you know, once you get the dream, the team is like, who am I working with? Who are the partners? Like you said, and then, you know, what you guys do really, really well is the routine. It's like, don't don't go outside your power zone.
Like,
if you're really good at one thing, then don't try to like compensate for the things that you're not so good at. Like put someone on your team that and you can double down. Because that's the hardest part. Like I could talk on podcasts or I could strategize or do all that stuff. Like when I got to get behind a funnel that's not working and like look at Facebook ads or Google or whatever, I'm just like, oh man, my team is like, you know, like I'm not the right guy to be doing this.
That's good.
Promote someone, hire someone, do something, right? Because, and then the last thing, like, and this is why this podcast exists, is to teach people how to build a machine. You know, like we're not meant to just work 80 hours a day. But unfortunately, our parents and even our grandparents, they kind of like put that kind of message and that model in place. And now I think it's our generation who has to unwind that and say, hey, look guys, like human evolution, like you're not meant to spend like 80 hours a week under fluorescent lights in a cubicle. Like there's more things to life and we got to get out there. But money gives you options, and so finding the levers to pull to get you those things are important. It's discovery. It's about, you know, evolution and, you know, figuring out like what works best for your specific lifestyle, I guess. That makes sense.
Yeah. Dude, that resonates because that whole thing, that fourth item there, system, I dubbed it as systems or machine or whatever, automation, however you want, leverage. Like you said, our parents, because we're all, I think we're roughly all about the same age, give or take a few years, but our generation, it's work hard, go to college. I know my mom said the same thing, dad too. And it's like one of those things you got to break as an entrepreneur. Like you want to kind of do everything. Cause I know that's like Matt and I, sometimes we'll get too close to a project. We're like, oh, we're capable. Let's just bang it out. Let's work a little harder. But it's like, you almost have to separate yourself from the shit you're not good at, find that team, create the systems to free up your deeper thinking to spot more gaps and do bigger things.
Yeah. And what's crazy is some people that it's like this in sports a lot too. You know, you'll have somebody that is good and is really awesome, and they get put in a different system and then they become great. Or even like you have a great player that's not performing at their potential and they get put in a different system and then all of a sudden they're an MVP. And it's like that a lot. I mean, like I was a great trainer while I was working on my first business, but these things, like I felt like I was born and bred to be digital marketing strategist, speaker, and, you know, like the final frontier that I'm building now is I hope to be, hopefully, a force to be reckoned with in the angel investment world, because the angel investor to me is like is something that like that's like my the kind of like the frontier I want to accomplish the most, because it's the people that really roll their sleeves up. That the Launch Lab is really like the evolution, the first step, and hopefully where we want to go with the parent company that we're building under the Launch Lab. And it's because angel investors really roll up their sleeves with the entrepreneurs. They get into the trenches with them. They say, look, like I'm here with you guys, like, you know, we quote unquote like made it to some degree, but at the same time, like that feeling of like building things and starting from scratch and like that never goes away. You know, like I have mentors that are like 80 years old that have 26 companies and $200 million in assets. And they just are like, what's the next thing? It doesn't go away, right?
And that's so, all of us, man. Yeah, I don't think, you know, if you fight it, it's like, no, that's your true being. That's what you love to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, spotting gaps. Before I even knew what an angel investor was, like 10 or 11 years ago, I would just think that everyone goes to banks to get loans. And, you know, if your P&L and your balance sheet doesn't look good, they just kind of once over you and then peace, you're out, right? Like. And so like what this whole kind of funding revolution has kind of brought about is people that really see the gaps and the opportunities, right? And just like we were talking at Aaron's thing about different types of currency, right? About what businesses now and like raising capital for a business idea, knowing that the business traditionally may not make revenue for a while or even at all, but it doesn't even matter because the other currencies kind of make up for it.
That's right. Yeah, user base and things like that. Like Instagram, they freaking, yeah, it was just all users. It wasn't revenue.
Yeah, I mean, even when you look at something like Google or data, or Google or Facebook, the asset, their biggest asset is all of the data they've collected over the years. They know like everything 100%. About everybody.
Yeah, I know. And can you imagine like the founders of Google walking into like a B of A or whatever and they're like, hey, I want to get a small business loan. Like we're going to just scale up our user base to $1 million before we charge a penny. And be like, what?
Well, this whole funding thing, this is actually something that's like Matt and I are newer in, but we're starting to learn a lot more, and you know we're connected to a lot of folks that do a lot of deals. They get funding in strategic ways. I mean you could go as basic as literally going to PayPal. If you run good transactions through PayPal, you can get instant funding based on your transaction level, and you just pay it back incrementally per transaction. And I mean it's like holy shit, you can get a lot of money for whatever you want to fund. If it's a software, if you just want to fund some ads, I mean, literally that's one way to do it.
Well, it's interesting. We actually had just like this sort of complete breakthrough. And this was what, maybe 2 weeks ago, we went to PayPal. We went through this process of like they have a thing called PayPal Working Capital where they'll essentially loan you money and then you just pay it back through PayPal transactions. They just shave off a little piece of every transaction that goes through your PayPal account until the entire amount was paid back. And we thought, this is pretty interesting. Let's see how much we get approved for, right? We went through this little survey form, answered all the questions. Literally within 15 seconds, they said, you're approved for $60,000. And we went, holy shit, this is like... and we didn't actually take the full amount, but we're like, let's test this out. And so we took a percentage of that capital. It was in our bank account that same day.
Wow. So is it like factored on your receivables or like, that's pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, it's awesome. It literally will take, so if, I mean, anyone can do this. It takes a total of like 2 minutes to just run your numbers, but it'll take either from the low end 10% of each transaction all the way up to like 30 or so. And you can select which you want to do. Obviously there's higher fees for other, but the whole fact of the matter is I think it's like a 10% fee. Basically you're paying back to PayPal. So just factor that in.
That's insane, right? So this is kind of going to go hand in hand with the way that business disruption and small business revolution and the micro business revolution and the entrepreneurial revolution are all going to continue to evolve. Is, you know, I mean, I think that like the company that I started and was the parent company of the Launch Lab is called Matus Venture Partners or MVP. Mm-hmm. And really, I have the same type of friends that you guys are talking about. And they said, well, why don't you, it sounds like you should start a venture partnership. And I said, great, what's that? And they said, basically like you're priming these people. You could have an accelerator, like something like the Launch Lab. And really you get them to a point where you can also kind of link them to the bigger capital guys, to the VCs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or other investors. Right. But it's that sweet spot of like as low as like $5,000 to pay for ads or upstart to like $50,000 or $100,000. Right. Which seems like a lot of money. But in the scheme of things, right, like there's companies that like have a one page business plan that are going to do $2 million on their Series A financing round. You know what I'm saying? And that's like, we won't touch you unless you raise $5 million. So $5 to $150 or like, really is small potatoes, but it has a huge impact because it gets more people to kind of take that leap, that entrepreneurial leap and say, hey, you know, like, and the cool thing is a company like PayPal understands that. So if they can nurture those entrepreneurial seeds, and again, like we had mentioned earlier, entrepreneurial thinking can just be a side hustle business.
Yeah.
But at least it's, you know, I mean, the net effect is that you're using contractors, using other businesses to grow your business, and so the economy as a whole will continue to develop, you know. And I mean it's exciting times
for sure. So one of the things you mentioned in the, you know, we send out a questionnaire kind of thing before we do the podcast, and one of the things you mentioned you like to talk about is how business models get disrupted and how to profit off of those disruptions. Now just to kind of dive into that topic a little bit, like, how do you determine like an industry that is ripe for disruption? Like how do you spot that kind of stuff?
That's a great question. So I've seen it over and over again in fitness. I believe there's one coming very soon in fitness again. But it really where disruption starts to really show is one when, like, I'll give you an example, because this is one that you guys are both in. I think that the mm-hmm. funnel industry, like the coaching industry, is about to have a massive disruption. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. because every time you go to an agency or someone who can just throw up an agency, it's like, hey, give me $50,000 and I'll build your funnel.
Right. Yeah.
And the problem with that is the funnel is not the thing. It's not like it's not the asset. It's not right. To a degree it is, but, I think if someone figures out how to lower that barrier, they can start to create a business model disruption where either software or other things that are more valuable than just that quick upfront cut, then I think that's going to be something you're seeing is that, and I think you probably already see it is like, I know in fitness, one of the things that it's like everyone went to the same seminar.
Yeah.
I used to have somebody go. I used to have somebody run my stuff, and then all of a sudden I see people that were running funnels, and they're like, "Well, we're not going to run your funnels anymore. It's just going to be $20,000, and then we're going to send you this website, and you do it yourself, and all these videos." And I just keep seeing that, and I'm like, "Dude, that's the wrong model because this stuff is uber technical, and $20,000, what?" Trainer or entry level is going to be able to drop that and really see an ROI, right? So, but get back to your question. It's one example. The way you spot disruption straight off is, I believe when there's only one way and the barrier to entry is so high that someone can lower it, right? Or you figure out one unique way to kind of add value without adding cost. And the thing is once you see a disruption and once it's been proven once, you see it duplicated so fast. You give you the example, like the box revolution, Birchbox, Mentor Box, right? Here's what they saw is they're like, hey, I can get all these things that are commodities, you know, like samples or ebooks or tripwires or things that people make once and then they really have no inherent value other than just to kind of create curiosity up front. And then migrate people up to a higher product ladder. Mm-hmm. So what if we bundled all these things and gave it like $10 monthly recurring revenue, right? Because recurring revenue is one of those things that is going to literally skyrocket valuation, especially for investors. Yep. Even if it's 10 bucks, 1,000 users, you're only making a certain amount of revenue, but you can sell it for 5 or 10 or 15X, mm-hmm. right? So once someone figures out how to add value without adding cost, that's when the disruption, you know, is kind of occurs. Like, look at Uber. Like, you don't have to have any inventory or any cars, but you can just work through a distribution channel and add jobs without adding pollution or cars or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so, like, digital marketing, we you know, all know, like, is kind of at the point of the spear of business disruption, because the more people can figure out how to have smarter marketing, digital marketing models, then they can build smarter business models. They can get the word out faster. Like, information and products and services can disseminate faster.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I mean, and scale just is absolutely enormous. Like when you consider, like, if you had to do this, you had to do this stuff snail mail, it just wouldn't work. Right. But if you can do it like email or Instagram or whatever, it has this enormous scale where people can just get it right away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, like, as technology advances and we get more and more sort of adapted to new technology, we start to realize that, there's a lot of things that are super antiquated that, you know, technology hasn't touched enough yet. And one example that comes to mind for me is, you know, me and Joe and one of our other business partners, we were sitting at the bank, last week, and we were opening up a new bank account for a new business that we just acquired. And while we were sitting inside the bank, we were all sitting there going, how ridiculous is this? A, all three of us all have to be at the bank at the same time. Like I, like Joe wasn't going to come. Me and our other partner thought that we could set it up without him. The banker said, no, you need your other business partner here before I can open this bank account for you. That's one thing. Second of all, why the hell do we even have to go to a bank anymore, right? Like I can get on my iPhone right now and I can get funding for a car and I can buy a car and I can have a car delivered to my house tomorrow. Yet to open a bank account, I have to round up three people plus a banker, sit down at the bank for an hour and go over this questionnaire with this banker, and when I leave I now have a bank account open. Like how antiquated of a system is that?
For sure.
Where every other industry has figured out how to set up that kind of stuff within seconds.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point, and the thing here is with how you spot business model disruption is when very savvy entrepreneurs figure out how to give people back their time and add in convenience, like Amazon Prime or Uber or whatever. But there's a caveat to that, because 15 years ago, if we would have said, hey, you're going to let your daughter or your son or your nephew or whatever just get in a car with a stranger, doesn't happen. But the other side of the coin to that, the yin to the yang, is brand. Mm-hmm. Like when brands start to develop and they get their own personality, like Amazon and Uber, this is where that trust, authority, and even celebrity kind of comes in, because everything you're talking about, like with the bank example, is adding convenience and giving you back time. And once someone figures out how to do that, an entire industry gets disrupted. It's the same thing with Netflix and Blockbuster. But that being said, like Netflix had to do a lot of branding and marketing to make it so that they're the preeminent go-to place. And then once that happens, Amazon Prime follows suit, and so does, you know, Sling and all the other, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with the banking example, I mean, we are in the middle of attempted disruption with blockchain and Bitcoin and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, like, they're trying to disrupt it. There's companies out there that are doing their hardest, like working their hardest to say, look, the banking industry is antiquated. It sucks. This is a better way. It's that it's that process of getting the adoption that is insanely difficult. That's the hurdle everybody has to get over. I think everybody sees, like, yes, the banking system is antiquated, and a lot of people can look at blockchain technology and go, oh, I can see how that would make it better. But it's that gap in between, that adoption phase, that is that monumental hurdle, I think, that most people would see.
Yeah, that adoption phase is huge, and it just kind of like who's doing it, who are they, who, what are we about, like other people like you who've adopted this, like those are the type of marketing messages and branding that you see. Like one of my great friends and clients is a guy who has a great business, and he is also an investor, and he started this company with a couple other partners. He's an investor, and it's called Aspiration Partners, and it's a bank online. So you have a checking account, and then you also have like an investment account. But the cool thing is they let you name what the fee is, which is kind of like their unique selling proposition. And then that fee, whatever the banking fee is, goes to solving like a global problem, right? So if you say, I elect to have 0.01% of my trend, like for banking or for services, like that's cool. And then that part of that 0.01% will go to solving hunger or clothing or some type of really global problem.
Yeah.
And that's their whole business platform, which I think is great. And they're really starting to make some moves and do some things that, and like their accounts and everything are going up, which is great. And I think that's just kind of more to the point of, if we can prove that and it's safe and it's secure, but also banking that traditionally has had this kind of like, you know, glass tower, high hat, like, you know, aristocratic kind of, right? Well, here are these guys that are uber successful, and they're like, well, why can't banking be good? Like, why can't it be the backbone that solves, right? And so I think fundamentally that businesses now have to solve a real problem or have to have a mission attached, because there's just not a lot of, like, there's not a lot of adoption or people that are just trying to make rich people richer.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Like, no, I love this topic. And, you know, we were actually at a event out in Chicago a couple weeks ago. A guy named Perry Marshall was speaking, you know, real successful business coach kind of guy. And he was actually kind of diving in on he wasn't calling it disruptions, but he was kind of talking about how industries get disrupted in a roundabout way. And he was saying there's really two ways to kind of disrupt businesses, and it's through a proposition modifier and a pricing modifier. You either figure out how to simplify the hell out of pricing in places where pricing is complex already, or you try to simplify the selling proposition that you're making and do things in just a different way. Like
simplification, basically.
Yeah, basically you either figure out how to simplify the price, or you simplify the proposition. Some of the examples they gave were like IKEA figured out how to simplify the pricing of furniture. And the way they simplified the pricing of furniture is, look, we're going to give this to you super cheap. Only caveat is, when you get it home, you got to build it. Right?
You got
to
build it. Yeah.
Uber simplified the proposition. You know, they I don't remember the exact wording, the way that Perry explained it, but you know, the traditional sense is everybody goes out there, and when they can afford it, they buy a car, and that's what they use as their daily driver to and from work. And their new sort of tweaked proposition was that, look, you don't even need to own a car anymore. There's already people out there that have cars that are driving to, you know, similar areas that you're already driving. Just hop in with one of them, right? They simplified the traditional sense of, you know, your commute to work or your commute to go out to the bars at night or whatever, you know. So he said it, in almost all cases, when you see massive disruption, it's usually because of one of those two things. Either price was massively simplified, or the selling proposition was massively simplified.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And the proposition, you know, also kind of encompassing, like, one of the ways that we're going to do this is this, but this is also going to benefit people for good. So it kind of is a nudge in well, okay, cool. Like, I'll go with it. Like, I was at Coffee Bean yesterday, and I always laugh when I hear like a proposition or like a pitch.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that got me. It's like, you know, normally they're like, hey, do you want to round up for charity? It's like $1.75. And I'm like, cool, a quarter, no big deal. And then yesterday the girl was like, would you like to buy a cup of coffee for a firefighter? I'm like, sure. Like, so what do you say? No? Like, and then I was like, how much does it cost? They're like, oh, it's only an extra buck. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, and so like,
that's rad.
It's the proposition. I'm like, wow, okay. So it's how you frame it. It's how you pitch it. It's how, I love it. I mean, I'm 100% in agreement. That's awesome.
And as long as it's smooth for the delivery, like you said, so it's like you don't have to think about it much for the end user. Like you said, bank transaction, it's just rolled up in your fee. You're not even going to see it. You're not going to feel it, but you're doing good. So if you can like create something like that with all that wrapped in there, it's money. It's
Good. And another thing that Perry talked about at the event we were at that I thought was super interesting is that when a major disruption happens, it often creates brand new industries, often creates brand new economies. So for example, like when the smartphone became more and more prolific, you know, mostly because of the iPhone, well, what happened from that was it created the industry of smartphone cases. It created the industry of app development for smartphones. It created, you know, just all sorts of new industries. It created industries of people who
listen to podcasts.
Well, yeah, it actually created the podcast industry.
SaaS.
A lot of SaaS, like, software. It, you know, it created all new industries because of one product. One product, because of it, new industries were born. And you can think of all sorts of similar examples of a disruption happening, and due to that disruption, you know, another example they gave was when Henry Ford didn't invent the car, but he disrupted the car industry by making them so much cheaper through the process of the production line, right? Well, what happened when a car used to cost $16,000, now a family could buy it for $3,000. What happened when cars became more prolific? Now you have drive-in movie theaters, you have drive-throughs at restaurants, you have the aftermarket car parts, you have, you know, the list goes on and on and on, that once an industry gets disrupted, a great disruption creates brand new economies, brand new industries.
Yeah, and here's like my kind of like, and I'm like sitting here just like, oh man, you guys are like my entrepreneurial brothers from another mother, right? But you know, I'm like 100% in agreement to this, and the way I see it too is who, like, when Henry Ford disrupted the car industry, right? The proposition was better, right? What he did essentially was curate, not create. Right. So he didn't create the wheel. He didn't create the car. He curated it. He said, look, I'm going to take all these things that were that you don't see them yet. Like, they're puzzle pieces. They might, I might borrow them from other industries, and I'm going to bring them all together, and I'm going to create and curate this system that's going to just work better. It just works better here. Sometimes you have to go, like the drive-in movie theater, that was a bank feature. Like the bank started the drive-in, and then In-N-Out came and said, hey, we want to put this for fast food, right? And so we're a nation of consumers, not producers anymore. And so if you're if you want to be an entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur, right, and you're in America right now, who better than you to say, hey, look, I buy things every single day. And some of the things that I buy or some of the industries that I buy in are a pain in the ass, like you just mentioned with the bank. Like, why don't I sit down and think about how I can borrow a model from a hotel and bring it over in this industry, or borrow from a car wash or whatever. And then all of a sudden you have a new take on the same business model. And then that disruption, you're right, creates other industries.
Ripple
effect. Subscription. Yeah. The subscription economy, right? Where it just makes things super simple as a pricing model, because you know, like, that, okay, I'm going to pay X amount, right? And then if I go over, then there's another tier or whatever. But if I don't, then I'm okay spending $97 or $100 or whatever it is. But the cool thing is that you keep people longer buying, and that you typically buy more versus if you're just like, okay, it's like, I was talking to a client yesterday. She's like, you know, she runs a high-end like style company, and it's just like, it's super awesome what she's been able to do. And I said, you need to start a subscription model, right? Disrupt the hell out of everybody who doesn't do this, and create some scale, but also create this user interface that's like very simple to understand. The proposition's easier. If you jump on right now, I'll give you a discount on clothes, and right, like pricing and proposition. And that's probably one of the low hanging fruit that I can see as far as a model is some type of subscription, right? Adding more value. I know we can think of probably 100, right? But when that turns and someone else figures out another way, you're absolutely right. Like, there's going to be 100 different offshoots, and that's just going to create more opportunity for people that want to adopt that. Or on the other side of the coin, it's like, oh man, how come we don't have traditional, you know, Blockbusters anymore?
I love those things. Right?
Yeah, I know. And I'm like, well, okay, cool, man. But this gives people the ability now to create income, to kind of like solve real problems in real time. You know, like every person I know that comes into the Launch Lab, they're just like, oh my God, this thing drives me nuts. And my response is always like, well, let's do something about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like,
let's dig in.
Yeah. You know, for people that scratch that entrepreneurial itch, they're just like, oh my God, I cannot stand this any longer. Someone's got to do something.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's like Henry Ford, or whether it's Jeff Bezos, or whether it's Mark Zuckerberg or Sergey Brin or whoever, you know, like whatever it is, right? Like, it's just one of those things where like the world either needs this or this cannot go on any longer. Someone's got to do something. That's kind of like the genesis story of a lot of like businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we could probably have this discussion for like another 2 hours, which is a great sign that we're getting on stuff that we're all really passionate about. So I have a feeling there's a part two to this episode in our future, but unfortunately we do have to wrap up now, and we do have a few wrap up questions that we ask everybody.
Cool.
And awesome. The first one is, do you have any books that have had a major impact on your life that maybe you find yourself recommending, or that you read multiple times, that you've read multiple times because they had such a big impact?
Yes. One is, one of them is called Die Empty by Todd Henry. Have you guys heard of that?
What was it called again?
Die Empty.
Oh, Die Empty.
No, I've
never heard of that
one. Yeah. Super. Like, so if you're a developer or creative or anything, like, it's just one of those things where it's like, leave it all on the table, you know, like figure out who you are and what work the meaningful work you're able to do. And then, you know, are you a driver, developer, you know, disruptor, right? It's super awesome.
God, I love that.
One of the other ones, I'm a big Rich Dad, you know, like Poor Dad, kind of like, I read the whole series. Any of those or Tim Ferriss, like all his stuff, like, especially his new stuff like Tools for Titans. But one of the things that I think the books that I always recommend is called The Road to Reinvention by Josh Linkner. Josh Linkner is a investor, entrepreneur, speaker. Like, he's just kind of like the framework or the prototype that I'm like, I'm going to meet this guy one day. And he had a huge impact on my life in a time where I was like, what is this thing that I'm trying to do? What's it called? Right? Mm-hmm. And The Road to Reinvention just kind of, it's a narrative. It chronicles just all these people that would not stop trying things till they got it right. One of his examples was this guy who literally like reinvented himself like 16 times before he got it right. So it's like, you know, like it's tough because everything right now is in this day and age is the guess, right? People are like, hey, Mike, I see you're doing this and this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm prototyping.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to learn more, right? Launch Lab wasn't hey, I'm going to call it the Launch Lab. It used to be called Move University or Move U. It didn't have a specific market, right? So it evolved. And that's the thing about reinvention, right? Is like it happened more and more and more and more and more. You know, like you guys, as you evolve, you'll have to reinvent yourself because you'll start to add things to the repertoire, right? Even though you already have a successful business and made a name for yourself, right? Like there's going to be a part two and a part three and a part four.
Oh man, we already reinvented like 10 times.
I feel like we're in chapter, you know, we're in part three or part four right now and we're looking at what's going to be part five.
No, it's funny because like I went to business school. I love this stuff, right? I love talk, right? Mm-hmm. And the first industry I decided to get into was fitness. And it's like people wouldn't take me seriously. Like, dude, Mike, shut up about all this business disruption stuff because I just want you to get my abs stronger, my arms bigger. And I'm like, what? I was like, no, I'm just doing this because this is the industry I'm in. Like, this isn't like my specialty. Like, I got more to give, right? And so I just figured, you know, hey, marketing and money, you know, investing and marketing, like those things are never going to go out. So if I kind of anchor it to that, hopefully I won't have to reinvent myself too many times more because, you know, I was like, I'm a trainer, now I'm a coach, now I'm a speaker. And even those things I had to develop and reinvent over the years. So yeah, Josh Linkner, Road to Reinvention, I probably read it 3 times a year. Just kind of piece through it. So yeah,
I love what you just said there too. The marketing and investing are always going to be around, and that's just such like a great sort of simplification of what all of us are just so passionate about.
I actually wrote that down because those are the two things that Matt and I actually we've studied so much of marketing, but the investing side, deal making, all that. Like yeah, it's like a science. It's an art. You know, there's not a specific thing to that. I even asked, we're in a mastermind with Roland Frazier. He's one of the partners of Digital Marketer. And he's like, I was like, do you have a playbook on like deal making or deal structure? And he was like, dude, it's an art.
Yeah.
Like you can't teach. I'm like,
deals are the same ever.
It's great.
Yeah. Everything intersects at money and marketing. And I tell my team, I'm like, you're going to come to me for, my name is Mike Matus. You're going to come to me for the 2 M's, money and marketing.
Man,
like,
I love it.
You know, like if you to me because like, I don't know, depending on the business, like my training staff, like don't come to me to figure out the workout of the day because I'm not going to know it or someone on my team will know it. Like that's the thing is like, I just kind of want to keep my mind clear so that I can kind of see these things on the horizon. And then where we get granular about the details is in the, is in the deal making, like what you guys are doing. You're like we often as strategists and investors get this like this tag where we're like we're just dreamers or like oh like strategists they kind of just are not detail people. Mm-hmm. It's actually the opposite. We're really granular on the details that matter. Like
yeah, that's true. Like, that's true.
Yeah, but just not on the things that don't. It's like I don't want to know about that stuff or this like. If it doesn't make meaningful sense to the work that we're trying to accomplish, you know?
100%, man. Oh. Yeah. All right. I'm going to cut you off because we will going.
Yeah, no worries.
All right, dude. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was saying, I'll look forward to seeing you guys soon. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Hold on. Where do we send people so they can learn more about you, your place? I know your physical location, but still.
Yeah. So you can go to MikeMatus.com. That's M-A-T-U-Z. And, you know, I got some tips and strategies and stuff there. At Mike Matus, M-A-T-U-Z on Instagram, Facebook, Instagram and YouTube, and then at Mike Matus Speaker on Facebook. DM me, ping me, like do whatever, man. I love people that reach out and tell me their story because it just helps me evolve and kind of learn like, I spend a lot of my time with coaching people and just kind of getting in conversations like this with people at the start, not necessarily the start of their business, but the start of a new venture, the start of a new direction. So like everyone has to have that, adopt that startup mentality, no matter if you're at the top of an industry going into another one, or you're just starting out. Right. Love it. So,
yeah, man. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. You're a giver. So, yeah, you definitely got a lot of value there. So definitely reach out to Mike, man. If you're in that realm, he's the man for you. All right, Mike, awesome. we're going to see you on the first pretty soon here. Thanks again.
I appreciate it. Thanks,
guys. All right, bye. All right. Thank you. And I hope you just enjoyed this episode you just listened to. Now, right now, before we sign off, I have a few things I would love for you to do. So the very first thing is to go find our guest on Facebook and tell them that you loved their episode with us. That's going to help them just feel good about themselves, but also it's going to spread the word a little bit more for us. So go find them on Facebook. Everybody's on Facebook, and go say that you love their episode and maybe one cool thing that you learned there. The second thing is to go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. Just look up Hustle and Flowchart and hit the subscribe button. And the very last thing, the third thing, is to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast and help us spread the word more. That's how more people are going to get this awesome knowledge, this cool podcast training, and a whole bunch of other cool free training that we give out at evergreenprofits.com. So that's about it. Go find them on Facebook, go subscribe on iTunes, and leave us a review. You would be amazing if you did that, but you're always amazing. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.